are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
Hello, you're listening to KBOO Community Radio. In these challenging times, one thing that brings us together and gives us hope is the galvanizing power of giving. Donate to KBOO's end of the year drive now at KBOO.FM/give or text KBOO to 44321. Join the thousands of KBOO supporters and invest in making a better world we all know is possible.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Good evening and welcome to Trans Positive. We're here with Hazel Anderson tonight. Let's go around and introduce ourselves. I'm Nicolette and I use AM or they, them pronouns.
My name is Emma and I use she, her pronouns.
My name is Hazel and I use she, her pronouns as well.
Great. So Hazel, do you want to start with telling us a little about yourself?
Absolutely. I was a Mormon for 24 years did all of the things, and then I moved to Portland and things kind of exploded from there. I realized that there were lots and lots of colors to paint with, I'm a food scientist. I have always loved art, but I was always steered away from it because of the good old-fashioned family values. I still was an opera singer for many years, and I am now doing weird performance art. And that is really amazing.
So Hazel, one of the reasons that I first heard about you was because my friend told me about these like really interesting like performance events you have that feature trans and non-binary performers. I've never been to one of your events, but I've heard really great things about it. Can you tell us about what you do?
Yeah, sure. Genderbomb's mission is very transparent and simple. We're all trans. We love drag, we love burlesque, but we don't do that. We make room for other types of performing in our shows, since there's plenty of venues for drag and burlesque. And really, we pour our hearts out. It's everything that can fit on stage, everything that, everything that we want. Something that I like to say is the entire emotional spectrum is in each show. We get angry, we laugh, we cry, we show frustration. there's a lot of kind of like circling around the theme, and we never directly explain gender because there's plenty of that out there. We just pick a different theme every time. This last time we were talking about death and what comes after, and how we go through the cycle of death, rebirth, and change. And at the end of the day, everyone gets paid. We paid all of our actors shares. There were about 10 of us, and we made $800, and you can do the math. And it was a delightful time. It always comes together as we get into the space and talk together and collaborate. And it's a bunch of people that are different every show, and they all kind of bring something to each other's acts as the acts grow and change through the course of the preparation. And then we do 1 to 3 shows and party, and it's this beautiful kind of short run kind of live theater experience.
That's amazing. So one of the things that really interested me about your performance is that your performances, it sounds like they're very site specific. Like part of what you're doing in the spaces that you inhabit is you're taking into consideration the kind of environment in which you're doing, you and your fellow performers are doing their performances. Can you tell us a little bit about like how site selection works for you and the most recent space in which you performed, which I heard included a treehouse?
We did have a treehouse. It's kind of a whimsical, almost fairy type backyard that we performed in. And we were kind of holding off from performing because our normal spaces are indoors and we didn't want any kind of risk with COVID. I know there's a vaccine, but I just don't like to take my chances. And so we were hell-bent on doing something in October. It had been too long. The last show was February 2020 before everybody knew what was up with COVID. And we really, a big part of our shows is the kind of collaborative effort that goes into it. They're kind of startlingly cohesive. And that's mostly because all of the acts are growing together. Sometimes with burlesque acts and drag performances and stuff, the performers will be siloed and they won't really be talking to each other, be finding their acts together. And we really get into the space and build our acts based on what exists there. This this particular stage we found because some of our performers were at a party there and they loved it. They saw how it was easy to use COVID precautions in the space, and a big part of our show is everybody's kind of committed to bring it to the stage. So it's not myself or another part of the crew that really leads the finding of these things. It's somebody has an interesting idea, throws it out to the group, and then suddenly that becomes the nucleus, you know. This particular space, we had the use of certain trap doors that are normally used to store stuff for the house that this space is in. But we were able to clear some of that out and actually use the trap doors to pop things out of. And then that lovely treehouse was just kind of an extra way to make the space feel inhabited, give people some kind of a feeling that this was really just a space that had grown up around the show. Even though we had found it, it was really great to be able to start off the show with a guided decomposition where I came out on stage and metaphorically killed the audience and then talked about what happened next while they were all on mulch and bark chips and stuff, imagining soaking right in.
Well, that sounds really cool. Can you tell us a little more about what your performances are like and what kind of things you do?
Absolutely. So everything is fair game. We keep it 18 plus because frequently people are choosing to go naked or do things on stage that are not kosher for younger audiences. Also, stuff can be a little bit spooky. So there's a there's a desire to kind of limit it in that way. But we do musical acts. We had a noise musician as well as some folk musicians in this last one. We do spoken word. I'm a writer. A lot of my stuff comes through in spoken word, and I create rituals frequently. My Mormon background kind of gave me a love for finding ways to ritualize just kind of chaotically. And so I love to do kind of bent and broken and just fully original rituals on stage. We do lots of kind of strange kink acts. We provide content warnings for everything. So everyone knows what they're getting into with each act. And we've had instances where audience members have specifically stepped outside for certain acts that they knew were coming up and had something they couldn't handle. Sometimes we have dance. It's a variety show, I guess you could say.
Thank you. So I'm really interested in how your experience growing up Mormon might have influenced how you choose to approach your art making now. Did the experience of growing up Mormon in any way infuse or inform how you choose to create your performance spaces today?
Absolutely. So a big part of Mormonism is that there's a certain range of emotion that you're allowed to feel that kind of is basically limited to joy and crying because you're so happy and so blessed, or being righteously angry at sin and that kind of stuff, or being sad, usually in a patronizing way about people. And so those are kind of the very narrow, restricted emotional spaces that I grew up in. And so I love to, throughout the show, I don't like to keep with any kind of specific uplifting or specific feeling. I like to browse the entire genre. Also in Mormonism, there's a very top-down structure where everybody knows exactly what they have to do at all times, and is given kind of an understanding that God will respect whatever actions they make, and that's it's all God's will. But at the same time, they have to always look over their shoulder to make sure they're not disobeying somebody somewhere. And I in the show, I like to give people what I call radical agency, where whenever somebody's asked to do something, they never have to look over their shoulder to know that the rest of the group supports them, because we've already given them the task and it's their job to find the way to do it. And if it doesn't work out for us what they choose, then we'll talk about it. But it's always a kind of a radical trust where we as a group believe that we don't need to hold each other's hands, even though we love to. It's a space that is really about finding new words and new stories to overgrow the kind of monolithic ones that a lot of us, including myself, had to crawl out of, because Mormonism believes that everything can be explained and everything fits inside of the, however many words are in the Bible and the Book of Mormon. And I believe that we haven't gone far enough yet. We need the stories to explain our existence, to explain our lives. And really, I don't want to retell anything that has already been told. I want to, as we break ourselves apart to put ourselves on stage, I want to find those beautiful new stories that don't fit with previous tropes.
Hi, we're just interrupting the show today to remind you today. I hope you will consider donating to KBOO. You can donate now at kboo.fm/give or text to KBOO at 44321. Thanks, and back to the program. Thank you. You're listening to Trans Positive. We're talking tonight with Hazel Anderson. Hazel is identifies as she/her and is a performing artist and a food scientist and also an opera singer who organizes these really unique performance events that are somewhat associated with the concept of gender. Nicolette, I asked the last question, so would you like to ask a question now?
Yeah, I was hoping to hear more about how your experience with gender has influenced your performance art, if at all.
Oh, absolutely. So I'm a non-binary woman, and I've gone through a lot of kind of phases in my understanding of my own gender. And as I've kind of grown through the feeling of being a butch trans woman, the feeling of being a non-binary person, the feeling of being just an amalgamation of a lot of different things that carries the word and the shape woman. I've found that I've lived many lives throughout my life, and I keep on just getting more and more complex in terms of how I can handle complexity and how I can find something satisfying within it. It's really a broad kind of rising tide in my life as I've come to like appreciate my own voice and appreciate the fact that I have something that I want to put on stage. I find that as I find new aspects of my gender, I feel like I have more to say, and I feel like I like the sound of my own voice. When I stopped being an opera singer, at least publicly, it was largely because all of the parts that I could sing were either old men or evil men, and that is all a bass gets to sing. I have thought about training my voice over time to be higher, to be more feminine, and I have a little bit, but I really, really appreciate recontextualizing myself on stage, finding the enjoyment of being everything that I am. This, you know, 300-pound, 6-foot-tall, delightful, low-voiced, strong woman.
Yeah, and I really understand what you're saying as someone, you know, who's also non-binary and is an opera singer. You know, I sometimes struggle with feeling like my voice, because it's so high, you know, I'm a soprano. I feel like that makes me come across as too feminine. You know, all the soprano parts in opera are women, often young girls. And I've had to come to realize that what we perceive as feminine, you know, it's all a social construct, and it's something that can sort of be, like you said, recontextualized. And, you know, the fact that I sound quote unquote feminine doesn't make me female. I can be non-binary and sound high voiced, low voiced, however. So I get what you're saying.
I love that. It's so interesting breaking out of the kind of intense, rigorous opera world where art is so controlled and your individual voice as an artist is so controlled and that's what is valued. And then realizing that your voice can be whatever you want it to be. And in fact, the beautiful art that you make in chaos is a lot more interesting than perfecting that aria.
So yeah, I'm curious, talking to, I'm sorry, Nicolette, I interrupted you.
Oh, I was just saying, yeah, I agree with you there. Go ahead.
So I was really curious, you know, talking, I don't think I've ever had a conversation before with two non-binary opera singers. And there must be something about that. I don't know exactly what it is, but, you know, I mean, there must be something really interesting here because you're both in a world that's already very, very unique. I mean, I don't know that many opera singers myself. And I know that to be an opera singer must take an immense amount of training. I mean, could you tell me, first of all, I'm just kind of curious, that maybe we're going off script here from gender issues, but what does it take to become an opera singer?
Would you like to field this or shall I?
I mean, I can give a little bit of my experience. I mean, for me, it definitely took a lot of training and a lot of discipline. You know, I had to learn how to really control my body, really take care of myself, because there's a lot of physicality involved with opera singing, but at the same time, it's also artistic. And so, you know, there's a lot of acting involved. There's a lot of really getting in touch with your emotions to portray what you're singing. So I would say it's very complex, but it is something that takes a lot of training, a lot of practice, and a lot of work. But you go ahead and give your experience, Azel.
I mean, breath control is a big part of it, probably one of the most important parts, and that really, really getting in touch and honestly as a base, specifically being able to relax fully while you're on stage and finding that place of peace because you have to open yourself up as much as possible, and it takes a lot of strong breath control, and then having to because frequently parts aren't written as low as I would be comfortable with, and so getting that kind of same comfort and same sound out of higher notes and higher registers was a struggle for me. It took a lot of work, a lot of kind of facing myself, because it's really hard. You have to really connect the brain to the body in ways that it are not obvious at first, because it does take a lot of control. It takes a lot to be able to give a tonally perfect performance while acting on stage, and also at the same time mastering your fear. I actually had terrible stage fright up until I started Gender Bomb because of all of the things that I'd been taught to focus on. And I'm not condemning opera by any means. I just had a bad relationship with it.
So I'm curious, is the world of opera, is it gendered? And is there room within the world of opera for non-binary opera?
I found it to be very gendered classically, because in fact it goes a bit beyond gender. The tonality of your voice is further split from the soprano, alto, tenor, bass into many, many layers of tonality. So you can be a coloratura soprano, you can be a spinto baritone, you can be all kinds of different types of voice, and you're pigeonholed by those types frequently into which arias, which characters you can play. And so I have this pipe dream that is probably going to be something I focus on a little bit later in my life, of getting together with some very talented people and reworking operas so that the parts can be sung in different registers. And I would love to sing the Queen of the Knights, Der Hohe Rasche. I pronounced that terribly. Her aria, that's just famously terrible and difficult, but I'd love to sing it in a bass register.
Right, that's the one everybody hears all the time, from the magic flute.
Yes, from the magic flute. And the magic flute is terrible, and it reflects a lot of the like bad stereotypes, but it'd be fun to break it and turn it on its head.
That sounds fantastic.
That particular aria is both fun to sing and very, very difficult to sing. I'm saying this as a coloratura soprano.
that is your wheelhouse. Oh, yeah. I would love to open up these parts that have been historically pigeonholed into single voice types with, you know, of course, single genders, and make them available. I think that it is a crime that from the same opera, Papageno and Papagena are any kind of cisgender. They are the most non-binary characters. Anyway, so that is definitely a goal of mine.
What about you, Nicolette? How do you see non-binary identities within the world of opera?
I mean, it's a territory that I feel hasn't really been explored a whole lot yet, because at least in my experience, the world of opera was always so binary and so gendered, like Hazel was talking about, because there's, you know, certain roles that are written for certain voice parts, and they're all very gendered, you know. I've always had to sing roles that were written for women, you know, the characters were women, and, you know, like I said, often young girls, especially for sopranos. So I would definitely like to see more playing around with gender in the world of opera. I would love to see more gender bending. I think that there are definitely ways to sort of rewrite roles and rewrite voice parts to be more gender inclusive. I would like to see that more, and that's why I think Hazel's ideas here are very cool.
Hi, we're just interrupting the show today to remind you this is an opportunity for you to use the individual power of generosity to remain connected and to support your community. In these challenging times, one thing that brings us together and gives us hope is the galvanizing power of giving. Donate to KBOO's end of the year drive now at kboo.fm or text KBOO to 44321. Join thousands of KBOO supporters and invest in making a better world we all know is possible. Thank you. I've asked the last two or three questions. Nicolette, would you like to ask the next question?
Sure. So I would definitely like to hear more about how exactly you came up with the idea for this performance art and how you got this group together.
Oh, Gender Bomb really started after some intense soul searching of mine, it would not exist without the Utah queer community. Honestly, I was just excited about this poetry that I'd made, this kind of concept to rework all of the Mormon temple rituals into like undoings. I don't feel trapped by my past with the rituals that they did in the Mormon church, but at the same time, I think that spiritually it's nice to go through some kind of a practice to reverse the things that you've agreed to. It just feels fun and vengeful. And I created, there's a thing called the True Order of Prayer, which is a prayer circle that they do in the temple. And I created a prayer for queer a prayer for queer liberation that I wanted to do in a circle of people who were tied together, to kind of invert the feeling that had been from the like very regimented, it the circle of prayer in the temple actually is boy girl boy girl boy girl all the way down, and they're giving each other these secret handshakes and signs and stuff. And so I wanted to symbolize some of the fact that we can't help that we're tied together, and just mix all the genders together because it's meaningless, and at the same time extremely meaningful. And I stood in the center of that and prayed to Lilith as everyone was beaten with copies of spiritual text, and everyone that was part of that performance really enjoyed going through that kind of process of getting together and finding each other and you know, piecing out the art. And I was floored that somebody from another state, because I was living in Oregon at the time, would invite me sight unseen to their stage with no audition, no prior knowledge of what I could do or how I even like moved or existed, and would take that risk with me. And I thought, why not take that risk with everyone and give the entire trans community a chance to get on stage and find themselves and find their voice as an artist. And I'd given up on doing any kind of professional art or any kind of real stage art after being a scientist for so many years. And it was a joy to be able to have that freedom. So I took it back to Portland and decided that I would do a show around that piece. And I needed to invite a ton of other people to come along with me in that experience. So I talked to people I knew in Transpose, a trans choir group in Portland, and I talked to folks that I just had been friends with for years and knew that they had something inside them that needed to come out. And some of them didn't feel trans enough to be a part of a trans performance. And I keep on finding that the people that watch our show, that kind of internalize what we do and stand there by the sidelines with a little bit of a wistful feeling, these people are usually folks that just don't feel like they can get involved because they're not trans enough. But some of the best art that's been in Gender Bomb has come from these people who only feel like they're a little trans, or that they resonate so much, but they don't know if they want to co-opt their the stage from the more trans people in the community. And so a big part of this is just helping voices who are from non-performing backgrounds or who came into this thinking they were cis realize their transness, their performing voice on stage. And honestly, like, I don't select anybody based on knowing them. I select them based on who comes to me, who has an idea to put on stage. And it's not just a group of my friends, and it changes every show, and I want it to change.
Thank you. We're talking tonight with Hazel Anderson. Hazel is a performing artist and a non-binary woman, and does these really interesting, puts together these very interesting performance events called Gender Bomb. So we're just talking with Hazel tonight about her work and her story. Nicolette, would you like to ask the next question?
Hi. Yeah. So, I definitely would like to know, are you open to anyone else joining Gender Bomb? And if so, how would they join?
Oh, absolutely. We put out submission calls every show. It usually comes with a piece of art that we've commissioned for the show. And we ask for anyone who wants to get involved to message us either on Instagram or Facebook, which terrible platforms, I don't endorse them, but that's mostly how we're able to reach people. We just ask that they message us with what they would like to do in the show, we get them involved. And there's no prior experience or practice or even aptitude necessary. We really come together and find the art from there. And this Gender Bomb is not a stable group of people. It's a collaboration of many trans people that come and go and get together, and it's different for every show. We really focus on the individual and not on creating some kind of a itinerant performing troupe. And so bring yourself, and don't worry, a lot of the people are going to be new to each other as well. And we all just kind of learn each other's art and grow along with it.
So I'm really curious, Hazel, something that you brought up a few minutes ago. You were talking about how some people didn't feel like maybe they were trans enough to perform, and something about your process like really opened the door for them to be able to do that regardless. And I'm curious, like, where is that fine line? Like, how does a person come to a space where maybe they feel comfortable performing? And like, where in some, for me, I don't really understand how somebody could have an idea of being trans enough on some sort of spectrum or some hierarchy of transness. But I guess for some people that must be a thing. How does that work for your performers?
So there are a lot of people that are, they feel like that if they don't have some kind of surgery, or they don't have some kind of difference in the way they dress, or have some kind of signifier, a marker of some kind physically or visually or however, that they're not putting themselves at risk enough, they're not dysphoric enough, they're not there's so many different approaches that people take to this kind of self-guilt. And what I've found is that there's a lot of beauty to be found in all of the narratives. And as people find themselves, as people realize that it's okay to be told you're a woman growing up and still love to wear dresses, and realize that you're bi-gender and or non-binary or a man or whatever, and that's all fine. And you know, there are so many different paths that you can take to this. And as far as finding that comfort level, I think that when people see what we do and see the just all kinds of different genders mixing on stage without folks needing to fall into one trope or another, and most of us are somewhere in the non-binary spectrum, and so I find that it's a very inviting group. Nobody's really checking people's credentials. I don't understand some folks' idea of community gatekeeping, because I just feel like we're getting pushed out of bathrooms and getting harassed and for not lining up with people's gender expectations all the time. Why do we need to do that to other trans people? Really just kind of creating the space and creating the atmosphere where nobody's looking sideways at you, or, you know, having to proclaim some specified idea of like, this is how I came up. This is, I knew when I was, right as I was born, that I was trans, and I, you know, have gone through all of the prescribed steps, whatever those might be. We don't really lean hard on any of those narratives, and so I think a lot of people don't feel the need to explain themselves, and I really appreciate that.
That's great. Thank you.
No problem.
You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio today. And remember to help KBOO reach our $45,000 membership drive goal by showing support today at kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Every donation is appreciated. Another question that I had that has to do with explaining yourself. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're great.
But as a journalist, I have to ask questions that oftentimes poke at definitions, because the only tool I have is language. So one of the things that I heard you say earlier in the interview when we were talking was you talked about kind of transitioning from this butch trans woman to kind of a more non-binary woman. And I'm wondering, like, if you would be able to elaborate more on that journey that you took from, like, exclusively identifying as a trans butch woman to more feeling more comfortable identifying yourself as a non-binary woman.
Absolutely. Is it okay if I kind of walk through a little bit of my life story? It helps understanding
Please.
Some of this.
Please.
Perfect. So I pretty much as long as I can remember always assumed that I was on team girl, whatever that means. I just was friends with all the girls pretty much until kindergarten, when people started specifically introducing gender into the games, and I was the brother or the father or the protector on the playground from all of the nasty boys and that kind of stuff. I hated that. I hated that suddenly, even though I was still close, I was something else and needed to be called out as something else at all times in order to be a part of the group. I had to find some kind of a reason to be there in those roles, and that didn't make any sense because all of us looked the same. We were just, some of us were wearing pink and some of us were not wearing pink, and that was the end of the story in my child brain. And so I went to my mom. I think this was 93 or something, in 1993, and asked her for pink clothing, and she said she didn't have any for me, And I think I talked around to other people. I've always been very open. And the folks told me that being a woman wasn't a thing, that I would be a transvestite or a crossdresser or whatever. And that didn't feel like me. So I was like, okay, I guess I just don't have words for this. And I guess I'm just going to keep being it. And the beauty part about being Mormon and trans is that the Mormon church, although it has very strict gender roles, doesn't really like to talk about the trans thing. And so I never knew that it was wrong.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So I grew up without shame, just kind of being myself the way I was. And I knew that, like, if I wore too much color, that the stuff would get taken away from me and probably trashed. He said he was taking it to the Goodwill, but, like, I know he was putting it in the trash. And so, like, I yearned for that color so much that I started just wearing hippie shirts and goth wardrobe, because I was like, okay, I don't want to wear any of these drab midtones. I'm sorry. Like, I'll do all the rest of the things, but, like, the aesthetic needs to exist for me. A big part of my awakening when I came to Portland is I met a non-binary person and realized that folks just were able to, like, do all of these things and there was a word for it. And I said I was genderqueer because I knew that I was something. I'd read and heard enough to know that, and, like, I remember my experience. I just didn't really know what I could claim, and I felt like I couldn't claim woman because that was my mom's thing, and I didn't want to become my mother. Well, I didn't feel like I could become my mother. And one of the bigger issues was I was married at the time to a cis woman who later came out as trans. But at the time, they were pretty intense about, like, just breaking into tears whenever I would talk about it and would forget. And so I had to come out over and over and over again. And I, through the process of kind of coming out to people and finding myself and feeling myself, I realized how hard it was to just, you can't just be trans a little. As soon as you're breaking the expectations given to you, you are a part of the other, the world that the cis people are afraid of. And I realized, as long as I was going to do this, I might as well be happy about it. And so I decided, okay, I'm fine with, you know, being a trans woman. And I really enjoy kind of my rough and tumble aesthetic. I don't want to dress all feminine all the time. I like it sometimes. It's great sometimes. But, like, I appreciate all of the different types of woman expression, whatever that means. So I decided butch trans woman was great. And then I just realized that I kind of felt like a woman in the way that I don't consider myself a god, but, like, in the way that, like, a goddess considers herself a woman, where, like, being a woman's not the most important part of me. And so I'm more, like, woman shaped. And as I kind of, like, found that non-binary identity through just honestly feeling a little bit more like a force of nature or like just a being than particularly a woman. I identified as just non-binary for, well, not, sorry, I'm not belittling non-binary identities. I love them intensely, but I didn't have the woman part associated with it. And I just was non-binary for like a long time until the pandemic, when I realized, hey, I don't have to just be one thing. And I really, really appreciate womanhood and exploring what it means to be an unconventional woman. And I love she, her. I just love those pronouns. They just ring music to my ears. And so really this process has been mostly just realizing that I can be what I want and I don't have to want just one thing.
Thank you. We're talking tonight with Hazel Anderson. Hazel Anderson is a performance artist and a non-binary woman who does really interesting performance art projects with a group called Gender Bomb. Nicolette, would you like to ask the next question?
I just wanted to note that I found it interesting, Hazel, that you felt that gender roles weren't really strictly enforced on you growing up, because, you know, you've also mentioned that you were raised Mormon. And I mean, I've known Mormons to really heavily enforce gender roles on people. So I just found that interesting, especially when, you know, in my experience, you know, I wasn't raised Mormon, but I was raised Christian, and I grew up in a very conservative area. And I had gender roles forced on me from the time, basically since I was born, you know. And so that's a large part of why, even though I've always known I was non-binary for about as long as I can remember, at least since I had a concept of gender, for the longest time, I felt like I had to not only pretend to be a girl, but also pretend to be much more feminine than I really was, because I had so many people basically forcing me to be feminine and expecting me to be feminine. So I don't know, I just found that very interesting. And I mean, if you could speak more to how, I guess, being raised Mormon or you know, the community that you grew up in affected your experience with gender, I would be curious to hear that.
I think I gave it a rosier tint maybe than I meant to. It wasn't that there weren't gender roles forced on me. It was more so that I felt like I could be man-shaped and do the man things, and at the same time have whatever internal narrative I felt like having. And it's not that they didn't believe that that was like an abomination. I just never talked about it, and they never talked about it in church, because that wasn't something that they even they were worried, I think, if they spoke the name of it, that they would summon it. And so I had to force myself into all kinds of terrible boxes. A big part of why I became a food scientist was because I knew that I could get work and that I could support a family with that money. The whole course of my life would have gone differently if I hadn't. I got married in the Mormon temple. I almost started having tons of kids, but it was about that time that my wife and I at the time were divorced, that we decided together that that was not happening. I think that it wasn't that the Mormon church was more accepting of my transness. It's that they were so afraid of the concept of gender outside of their boxes that they wouldn't even bring it up. And people kind of pretended not to see that I was mincing like a woman, or that I was, you know, doing any number of like weird things because they wanted to reinforce so heavily that I was a man. And yeah, it's Mormons can be understood to be very positive and cheery all of the time. And that's usually because their technique is killing with kindness. And so instead of going hard negative on my behaviors, they would be like, you want to find a woman, don't you? You should waddle like a man. And so on and so forth.
Thank you. So we've been talking tonight with Hazel Anderson. Hazel, we just have about 2 or 3 minutes left in the show. It's gone so fast. But I just wanted to give you an opportunity if there was anything that we hadn't talked about that you wanted to make sure to get out to our KBOO audience. This would be a great time to share that. And also to offer Nicolette and myself a chance to ask you any last questions.
Absolutely. Gender Bomb is not supposed to be a monolithic entity. We don't have the energy to be producing shows all of the time. It's something that comes directly from the heart and it's very collaborative. It's not something that we can just throw up every single weekend. And it's really, really easy if you have any kind of desire in your heart to put something on stage to just make a show. It doesn't take much. We sold out our first show before anybody knew us. And we've had no problems filling our audience. I would love to, if any of you would like to go onto the Facebook page, Gender Bomb on Facebook, and reach out to me. I would love to help you with all of the experience and understanding that we've learned. And I would love to see hundreds of shows on any subject. It doesn't have to be trans. It could be BIPOC shows. It could be disability shows. It could be, you know, any kind of show that wants to come up. I want to see more people performing these kind of raw experiences for people.
Thank you. Do you have any last questions, Nicolette?
I can't really think of any more questions at this time, but I've really enjoyed this conversation. You know, this was a lot of fun, and I definitely will reach out to you about Gender Bomb because this just sounds very fascinating and exciting.
Oh, I'd love to hear that. Thank you.
Well, Hazel, it's been a real pleasure talking with you tonight on Trans Positive. Thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to learning more about your future performance art events.
Absolutely. We'll be back in spring with a show theme that we haven't announced yet, but I promise you is going to take your breath away.
Great. Thank you. We've been talking tonight with Hazel Anderson from the performing arts group Gender Bomb. Hazel, thanks again so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks. You've been listening to Transpositive here on KBOO. I just want to thank everyone who's given to KBOO's end of the year drive. If you haven't given yet, you can by going to kboo.fm/give. It's our members who literally make shows like this possible. So thanks so much for your support. Bedroom surprise.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. for The Melting Pot, featuring DJs, producers, and electronic artists from around the globe. Win tickets and stay up on events each and every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. on The Melting Pot, right here at 90.7 FM KBOO.